It is. What a joy to be here with the North Street family, and I certainly count this a tremendous privilege to be able to speak to you this morning. And I just have to say something about Mary Grubb. You know, what a wonderful life, and we all know a wonderful servant of God. When I came here initially, she came up to me and she said, knowing where I was from, she said, "Did you know Myrtle Rowe?" And Myrtle Rowe was, the first single missionary lady from our fellowship, the Churches of Christ, to go to Africa, or maybe to go anywhere in the world. And she conversed with Myrtle. And she said, "Would you like to read the letters that I got back from Myrtle?" And yes, she brought me these letters that I still have, from which was Northern Rhodesia at the time. You know, it went Northern Rhodesia, Rhodesia, then Zimbabwe, but it was, at that time, it was Nyasaland and Northern and Southern Rhodesia. And, I got these letters, and they told a history that I didn't know of, even though I grew up in that area, but it also told a lot about Mary and how she encouraged this single young lady, you know, in Africa. And I'm sure we've got all the stories of her, but I have fond memories of Mary and look forward to being with her one day and reminiscing about things in the past. It is so good to be here and to share with you thoughts from 1 Peter. Even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Those were the words from a brash guy. You know, Peter, wait a minute. You actually said that after the Lord had previously made this statement, "You will all fall away because of me this night." And let me tell you, the statement of Jesus Christ was prophetic, but it wasn't pessimistic. Because there was going to be a major comeback, even though they would walk away from him now. And Peter was going to be part of that wave. Stephen Joubert, professor of New Testament studies at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. It is a government university. And he tells this story about he got a new car. And he says, "What is it about new cars? You know, they have that smell. I mean, they just nail that smell." And he said, "You just want to be in it and drive all the time." And my wife said, "I've got something that I need to take care of." And he said, "I knew what it was. My daughter was going to the prom. Our daughter's going to the prom. And she found a dressmaker that was going to finish the project and it needed to be picked up today." And so he said, "Ooh, I volunteer," you know, because he says, "I get a chance to be in my new car. I can fiddle with all the buttons, you know, as I drive my daughter to get her dress. I'll be happy. She'll be happy. It doesn't get any better than that." We arrive at the house and I just send her in, you know, "Go get your dress so that I can kind of, you know, mess around with the car." He said, "I sat there so excited and somebody knocked on my door, rather well-dressed guy, and I just rolled down the window, you know, because I thought, you know, maybe he wants to look at my car," and he stuck a gun at me. And I thought for a split second, he's smaller than me. I think I can take him. Until I heard two voices that had got in the back seat and said, "You better get out right now." And he said, "I got out and they kneeled me down towards the house away from the car, and the gun was in the back of my head." And he said, "I just knew my life on earth was over." He said, "Now, if you thought I was scared then, it's amazing how you can kick it up a notch." Because he says, "Then I was just beside myself because I thought, what if my daughter comes out of the door right now? What would happen to her?" And he said, "I was just, you know, just praying, please let that." And the two guys that were in the back seat said, "Shoot him, shoot him." And he said, the driver just got in my car and away they went. And he didn't shoot me. And he said, "My car was hijacked. But at that moment and at that time, Jesus hijacked my heart." He says, "I was a professor of New Testament studies and it was all intellectual with me." He said, "But my heart came into it then." You know, when you read 1 Peter, it's difficult to imagine that the same man who said, "I do not know the man," and when that cock crew, you know, "I do not know the man," writes these words, "Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense or give an answer And so in this beautiful letter, he has some wonderful current thoughts for humanity today. One is that he makes it clear that the process of becoming holy begins in our minds. He says in verse 13, the first chapter, therefore prepare your minds for action. He shows us, begin to think right. And he gives a number of things to get us on the right track. Actually, really commands, he throws out here. He says, prepare your minds, keep sober, set your mind on grace, don't be conformed, be holy. Peter wants us to realize that whatever suffering comes our way, whatever calamity, we can rise above it. There's power to rise above it. Let me just read the first four verses of chapter 1. Praise be to God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In His great mercy, He has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade, or be kept in heaven. And in this majestic hymn called a doxology, he gives these wonderful reasons. He says, let me tell you, you know how you rise above it? First of all, it's the living hope here. And this living hope that we have is different from the horizontal hope that humanity has. Like, I hope I win the lottery. I hope my son straightens out. I hope I can keep my job. No. This hope is grounded in the reality of Jesus Christ and His resurrection. He talks about this permanent inheritance that comes when we live this holy life. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you've traveled a lot too, but I have. I've been in a lot of hotels in a lot of parts of the world. I guess one of the moments that really stresses my patience, and let me just say this, I've made this promise a long time, that if I was going to live for God, that I needed to try to positively impact everybody I meet. So I don't blow up in front of people, okay? I might do it later because I know I make an impact. However, you've traveled all day. It's 10 o'clock. You reach your hotel. You're anticipating a shower and laying your bones on the bed. And what happens? You go to the desk and you say, my name is Flynn. And that person looks at that screen, and there is a blank stare back to you. Sorry. And then you pull out your number. You got the number. No, sorry. Now, you know what's going to happen? You're going to be sent probably 3 or 4 blocks down the road to some dive, or something like that, I want you to know that that's not going to happen, Peter says, when it comes to our permanent inheritance. There will never happen to us, because our reservation is purchased by the blood of Jesus Christ and confirmed by His glorious resurrection. And there is no celestial receptionist that will tell you or that will ask you, by the way, what is your name? What this life means, living a holy and having this living hope, it produces something, Peter says. It produces an appetite for doing good. And chapter 2, verse 17 says, show proper respect to everyone, love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, honor the king. He says in verse 15, for such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of the foolish man. Oh, we know you Christians. You Christians follow another king. And you Christians are really a sect that wants to cause revolution. You want another government. And Peter says, literally, you muzzle people by the way that you are a model citizen and by the way that you treat everybody in the whole society. And that's not us today, because we don't live in that kind of world. But we, with the living hope today, we are motivated to do good. And boy, have we. Boy, have we. We had a chili supper last year, and we walked away with, I think it was over $24,000. It's about a $6 for a well. Well, some was more, about between 6 and 10, depending what we're going to do. But this well out here at Intubus and Duna, 300 families. When I left North Street and when the check was sent, let me tell you, 300 families for the last year have got clean water. Besides, just from that well, we have immersed 56 into Jesus Christ because of that. And then that's where they were getting water, by the way. That's a dry riverbed, and you go down there about a mile away, and you go dig, and all the animals have walked there, all kinds of animals with all their feces. And they dig that water, and then they head back to their village. And that's why they only live in up to their late 20s or early 30s. But there was a church here in Nacogdoches, Texas, that changed that from that village. I like this well that we did. Don't you like it? You got the animals on the one side, the kids on the other, you know. Just great. A village of 200 families, you know. And by the way, we've planted churches everywhere here. The one before, we already had a church here. Because of this well, we planted a church. Oh, by the way, how do you like the vegetables that we can grow? In fact, I told Sherry, can you please teach these women how to fry green tomatoes? I mean, that is some serious slices, isn't it? I mean, look at that cabbage. I mean, it's just made, it's like the soil was saying, well, the water should have arrived a long time ago, you know? So here is in Seca Elementary School. Now, when Curtis and Rogelin came, and by the way, did such a wonderful, wonderful job. I mean, it was just amazing. And Rogelin, you know, has come several times. Curtis came and has made such an impact. He's coming to Zimbabwe, Lord willing. And they anticipated it because one of the ministers that was in Swaziland with Curtis, he's already gone back and said, you just wait. You're going to hear some great, great stuff. So they come in. And then one of the elders have decided to come with him too and drive on the left-hand side of the road. So I'm great. Mike Miller's going to come too, join us, you know. So we're going to have a blast. But this was a school we went to that had no water, 700 kids. 700 kids, no water. You know their toilets were, I mean, they just threw lye in there. That's all. It's almost beyond our comprehension. And so, yes, Curtis and Rogelin, we went to every class and gave out. We gave out 700 backpacks from the 7,000 that was donated for us to ship over for that school. Amazing. And there they're drilling the well. Now, this is, let me just say, we didn't drill water then, but we've drilled water now. But part of the money that's going to go to this next, to this well is because we now have to build tanks and we have to get a generator and all that sort of thing. So we still need to finish that off, although they have water now. And then we did an orphanage too. So I just want to thank you. Look at those orphans, man, at Chivero in northern Zimbabwe. And by the way, we also helped them get uniforms. Oh, they look so cute. with their uniforms and at their school, you know. And then we also drilled the well at where we're building our Christian high school. There's no high school there. And we said we'll build a Christian high school. And you know the story. We've given 70 acres. Okay. And so there's our son, Lee. And so we've got that water going now, you know. And they're using that for construction of the school, which should open next year sometime or the first part of 2020. But we are thankful. And that well was about 10,000. But we are so thankful for what you're doing. And so we have our clinic. And let me just say, we're just talking about good works here. I want to get to some other thoughts, but I have to show you this clinic. In fact, I want to thank Kim and Debbie for always housing us. But Kim's father, who's gone on to be with the Lord, he had a big role in that clinic. September last year, we had it open a year, so 106 babies. I said to the nurse, 106 babies? She said, oh, Mr. Flynn, this is a fertile area. Yeah, I think so. But we're doing so much other good as well, you know. And there's one of the babies, and I just want you to see the house that baby lives in. The nurse in the pink dress is an amazing lady. She gets on a scooter and she goes through the villages on these paths. There's no roads and checks up on all the babies. And that's awesome. Our ACT project, which we ship containers from here. Look at all those books going to a school and how that opens up schools for us to share Jesus. And those are some boxes that were loaded here in Nacogdoches are now in Africa. And some of you know it maybe because of your backs, you know. And then others that are going there as well. And we're feeding 1,200. And I just want to show you, my daughter Laura and her family because they're all involved. Laura did our constitution and she also did our faculty and handbook and our student handbook as well. And our oldest grandson, who you can tell, you can't tell he's my grandson, can you? He's three times to Africa. So we're building this school now, so please pray for it. It's going to have about 1,100 students, of which half will be boarders, and just pray about that. And this is our teachers. every one of those teachers, and also it is our board. And they're all Zimbabweans, except for Lee and myself on the board. And so we're making, and we're going to have a Zimbabwean principal from the start. And I want you to know that all our teachers, half American, half Zimbabweans, will all have their master's degree in their particular field and a BA in Bible. And so we rejoice in that. And so that's what Peter says, you know, you do things like that when you are, live this holy life. It's just a natural, you know. It's just natural to be that way. But one thing you'll do also, you will shock the pagan crowd. Notice in the 1 Peter 4, he says, so as to live, verse 2 and 3, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. Or how about the NLT? It says, you won't spend the rest of your life chasing your own desires, but you will be anxious to do the will of God. What do you mean? I mean, things have changed for me now. The sexting, I don't do that anymore. The hooking up at college, it's not part of my life anymore. I don't do that. And you know, the getting pumped up about getting drunk over the weekends, it's just not me anymore. And somebody might respond who's absolutely shocked because you made such a change in your life. They'll say, well wait a minute, you're still in your 20s. And the response will be, it's not about age, it's about transformation. I'm now presenting my body as a living sacrifice to God. Not for my own desires. I lived in BC, which is before Christ. I now live in AD, which is after Christ. The life is different for me now. I want to show you this picture, this guy right here. The guy on the right with the tie is Haley Malungani, a wonderful minister, young minister of the gospel. The guy on the left has been doing all our drilling for us for the last 7 years. An amazing man. When Haley got him and said, listen, help us with drilling our wells, this guy, Christopher, said, I'll drill the wells and I love what you're doing, but do not speak to me about religion. I don't want to know about Jesus. He says, I've got my life. But he says, I am glad you're helping people. And for 7 years, he held that line, as it were. And Haley would, in time, you know, they built up a good friendship. And Haley would say a thing or two. Haley didn't pound him. He just, opportunity came up, you know. Haley would be there if you know, help his family or whatever. Last July, that guy walks in. He walks into the Sunday assembly halfway through. Apparently he made up his mind right there. And he said, I want to become a child of God. Shocking the pagan crowd, you better believe his friends were blown away by the change in his life. One friend said, out of all the people, I never thought he had become a follower of Christ. How about you're in good hands? 1 Peter 5 says, listen, you live this holy life and you have this appetite for goodness. And whatever calamities come your way, you rise above it because of the strength in Jesus. And I'm telling you that whether it's here or whenever this physical life ends, you're in good hands. So humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time will lift you up in honor. Give all your worries and cares to God, for He cares for you. And we had 806 last year that did that in Africa. And you're a part of it. And when you think about what you've accomplished in this past year, and already this year we've set a goal that we want to see over 1,000 come to Jesus Christ, and we well on our way. And yet I want to close with this. This is the Vimbas. They live in Zimbabwe. Austin and Miriam, I know you don't know them, but when you think of people that are just spiritual giants, I think of them. He was 17 when he started following his uncle around. His uncle was a gospel preacher. My father, who's 91 now, knew them very well. And Austin followed that line. But he was on two tracks too. He built a business. He had very successful business as far as transport is concerned. He had big buses going to South Africa and other countries and other cities. He did really well. But as time went on, he said, I really need to further my spiritual maturity and my depth of knowledge. And so he went to his wife and he said, we're going to sell everything. And if you'll go stay with your parents, I have enough money to buy a round trip ticket to the United States. I'm going to Heritage Christian University because I saw their paper, and I have money for 1 year. And I've left enough money for you and the kids, and I believe the Lord will take care of us after that. And the Lord did. And he went there, and the family came over there, and he came back to Africa. And he started working. He planted a church, and that church would grow to 500 and go down to 200, and grow to 600 and come down to 200 again. And all the time he's planting 15 churches from that one church. In March, Sherry and I were with him. We had such a wonderful time. We flew back. 2 weeks later, we got a phone call. Brother Austin loved weddings. Oh, he would celebrate. You know, they have his traditional dances, and here's this preacher. He would do the ceremony. When they got to the reception, boy, he would be doing the traditional dances with all the people, you know. And he asked for one song to be sung, and he said, that Zulu song that encourages the young couple to constantly look to God as they go through life. And everybody got up, and everybody danced, and everybody sang. And he sat down for about 10 or so minutes, and he put his head on her brother's shoulder, and he passed away. And Sherry and I flew back, and there was 3,000 at his funeral. And the reason I want to share this with you is because I've never been through an event like that before. When we were finished the service, which, by the way, we began at 9 and we ended at 6 the evening, but I just want you to know that when I finished speaking after several speakers, they said everybody can come by and view the body. But you said you can't stand there. There's 3,000 of us and we've got 50 miles to go to the cemetery. By the way, the funeral, the cars were about a mile long and buses to go 50 miles to the funeral. So they came filing through. Well, 30 men got up and stood behind me and started singing. Bass, tenor. I mean, I told Sherry, I said, I could have stood there the whole day. They sang for 45 minutes nonstop, one song to another. Didn't stop to say, okay, we're going to sing this song. Just went from one to the other for 45 minutes, these men. And all of them had been mentored by him. And many had been taught by him. Now, we might not all have that kind of platform as far as our spiritual life is concerned. But you know, we all live with confidence, and we will use our abilities for God's glory when we realize and when we grasp that we are in good hands, you know? And that's what Peter's saying. Peter's saying, listen, I was bold and I was just about words. You remember that saying years ago, you know, walk the talk? He said, you know, I was just talking then. Not now. Not now. I'll close with this. Sherry and I were coming from Garrison, and we turned left and went past Appleby Church of Christ building. And that always has a special memory for me because years ago when I was here, they asked me to hold a gospel meeting and they asked Dirk Wheeler to lead singing. And Dirk with his bow tie, you know, and he just lead, you know. He came with his briefcase, you know, and he led. He went home young in years. Brother Austin was 72. But whether we're here or whether we're there, children of God, we're in good hands. Good hands. Why would anybody want to live a life without that type of security? And so we extend that invitation. Won't you come as we stand and sing?